Hello. You see, Brendel, you always thought you were so smart. You thought you could come on the Telran and pretend your superior attitude about promoting peace would convince the rest of us we were wrong about our purpose in the dark. What you fail to realize is that our purpose doesn't need justification. The Greshen Empire will expand with or without your spineless willingness to promote non-violence. That is how we win wars. Hence the reason you're about to get tossed to the wayside and left to die. I'd wish you a long life, but we both know you'll be eating a bullet within a few days. That's my gift to you.
You're a real son of a bitch, you know that? Brendel said, his voice full of contempt. Make a man angry enough and you might make him slip. Make him too angry and things might get a little out of hand. Brendel felt his hold on his own emotions starting to slip. Ilium laughed, but it wasn't joyful.
I guess I have you to thank for my promotion and how good I feel about it.
Ilium pulled out Brendel's comm unit and toyed with it in his hands.
Maybe I'll send a message to your mother and tell her how weak of a man you were when you ate the bullet. It won't matter that it hasn't happened yet. Maybe the grief of losing her son will drive her to the same conclusion. That is, if the dishonor of being a traitor hasn't done that already.
He tapped Brendel on the head with the comm unit and winked at him. The anger in Brendel's chest was starting to burn, and there was only one way to let it out, with violence. Brendel drove his head into Ilium's face with enough impact to knock the other man on his ass, breaking his pointy nose in the process. He looked at one of the guards and said, "I'm ready to go now," extending his wrists to be released from his bonds. The guard, Severe, laughed as he unbound him, but said nothing. Brendel turned his back to Ilium, who sat wiping the blood from his face, and picked up his comm unit. "Thanks for reminding me. I didn't want to forget this," he said, waving the comm unit tauntingly. "Oh, and don't forget it only takes a little more pressure to drive the cartilage of your nose into your brain and kill you. Maybe you can think of this as mercy." Brendel stood up and stepped down to the cargo bay door, the steep incline making him realize how much falling would hurt. "That's my gift to you, asshole." Behind him, Ilium scrambled to his feet and lifted the cannon. He followed Brendel to the cargo bay door, where he looked down and saw the traitor looking back up at him. Brendel was armed now as well. Brendel could see the rage in the other man's eyes. He could see how badly the man wanted to pull the trigger and end Brendel's life right there. A part of Brendel wanted to do the same, but for other reasons. Instead, as the cargo bay door slowly closed the men off from one another, he settled on the one thing he knew would get under the other man's skin and last a long time. He winked. Chapter 13. Anki. It wasn't like Anki to wake up from a dead sleep, but since reporting to the Saratora she had hardly had a full night's sleep. She was sure that most of it had to do with the anxiety of being in such a different environment, drifting towards the enemy presence for battle. Even understanding the justification for her restlessness was unnerving as she lay quietly in her rack, adjusting the sheets because the room suddenly felt too warm. She couldn't help but think she was going crazy. Maybe it was the confinement, the lack of pure air flowing in and out of her lungs. She had heard of people having allergic reactions to recycled air, but all of those reports were from decades-old ships made from materials with carcinogenic properties. The Saratora was not that kind of ship. Frustrated, Anki rose from her rack and padded across her stateroom. Each step her feet touched upon the cold deck until she found herself standing in front of the mirror. She looked at herself, the darkness around her eyes from a lack of sleep and disheveled hair falling off her shoulders. Her amber eyes reflected the pale light of the room as she looked at the woman she had become. Only 3 years of training had changed her from the soft teenager without a clue of how the world worked into a grown woman, chiseled muscle and confident gaze. At least she was once confident. Now she could see the fledgling fear hidden behind her eyes, and wondered if others saw it too. She turned on the water in her sink and splashed it on her face, the cool water helping to liven up her senses. Truth be told, she was bored and had too much on her mind during the long periods of doing nothing. She trained several hours per day, but that didn't fill the void of empty thoughts permeating her mind, affecting her sleep. Angi looked at the time, and it was a few hours before the official start of the workday on the ship. "But I was up and might as well do something to occupy my time," she thought. She dressed in the gray uniform left sitting at the edge of her rack. The two-piece uniform hugged her body, but not too tightly. It was like a firm handshake, snug and secure, but comfortable. Her boots completed the ensemble. The dull black leather, running halfway up her calves, tied tightly at the top, came equipped with electromagnets for walking in zero gravity. In theory, they were designed to aid infiltrating an enemy ship by allowing Marines to stand on the hull and breach the airlock without the need for a full EVA suit. The theory hadn't been tested in an actual boarding, though, so the jury was still out on whether or not they were effective. Anki thought about the horror of the boots failing and a bunch of Luthien Marines floating away into the dark until their oxygen ran out. "It's not an ideal way to go out," she thought. "Better to take the bullet than let the float kill you." The gym was empty this time of night, which was a good thing, in her opinion. Too many people were a distraction, and a cluttered gym didn't allow for a very fluid workout. As a Marine operative, she was trained to operate solo instead of part of a regiment. The isolation from others might have been difficult to handle for some Marines, but her withdrawn childhood had given her advantage to beat back the loneliness. If anyone was cut out for her line of work, then it was Anki Paro and others who grew up in similar situations. She didn't look back on her youth with regret, though. Anki had coped with the loss of her mother by retreating into her own mind. Her father had always been there for her. But sometimes she needed to be there for herself. She hadn't wanted to burden him with the grief she felt at losing her mother. It occurred to her that she had never told him that. "Why do my thoughts always drift back to my childhood or to my imminent demise?" she thought as she climbed onto a treadmill. Running in uniform wasn't very comfortable, but she made sure to train that way at least once a week. It didn't matter how much endurance you had. If you couldn't run with boots, then you were more likely to die. War was a dance, and you needed to have the coordination to move across the dance floor unscathed. It was a horrible analogy, but it was the one given her by her Marine instructor during the long, arduous runs weighed down with all of her equipment. Of course, he said that from the relative comfort of running shoes and shorts. The treadmill escalated faster as her booted feet pounded against it. The electromagnets added a heft to each step that made her shins burn the faster and harder she ran. That burn crept up her legs and into her back over the course of the next few minutes, reminding her of why she only did this kind of workout every 6 or 7 days. It sucked. Exhaustion flowed through her body more efficiently than oxygen did, but she kept running, gasping for breath, panting for air to relieve the yearning in her lungs. She wanted to drink, but thirst was a motivator to run harder, to meet her goal. She could reward herself with deep breathing and quenched thirst after her workout was complete, she decided, watching the numbers rise on the treadmill. It was through the dull thudding of her heartbeat in her ears that she heard an announcement over the ship's intercom system. The voice sent a chill down Anki's spine.
On board Saratora, this is the Tactical Actions Officer. We have entered an area previously known to be occupied by the Grushin Navy. We are in a high-alert environment. At this time, no further communications will be emitted until we are outside the threat environment. Only if our situation escalates will an announcement be made. Thank you.
Anki hadn't thought the Saratora could travel so fast, but here they were. In an area where Greshans had murdered the last remnants of a non-hostile world. Her heart beat hard in her chest, and it wasn't just the workout's effects on her body. It was as if her anxiety was met by the real world, and the taste of potent revelation was too much to bear. She took her water now, in hopes of washing away the taste of bile slowly rising from her throat. This is the real deal now, she thought. No sooner than the thought crossed her mind, she felt the recoil of the ship's countermeasures deploying. What the hell? There was no alarm or anything to indicate the presence of enemy forces, she thought. The deck beneath her feet shook like a leaf on the wind. If not for the electromagnets on her boots, she would have been tossed through the air as the Saratora listed port at a hard angle. What had been in front of her was now above her, which was very disorienting. It was true what they said about relying on your training to get through an emergency situation. The repetition of every simulation she had endured over the course of 3 years rang clearly in her mind. Her reactions were nothing more than acute muscle memory, firing impulses to known stimulus. The ship quaked, and she adjusted her steps. The ship listed, and the bulkhead became the new deck. All her responses were automatic as she hurled her way through the empty passageways, the magnets in her boots helping her maintain footing. The Saratora was huge. In fact, in Anki's mind, it was bigger than huge. But that only meant that she had to run harder to get to her station. She wasn't entirely sure when the klaxon had sounded, but it was a nauseating ringing in her ears now. Sailors and marines were falling from their berthings, half-dressed and half-awake. It was an emergency, and their trainings were probably kicking into gear through their groggy minds as well. She passed several sailors trying to access a hatch that appeared locked. Heat permeated from the bulkhead, blistering the paint around it. Instinct told her there was a fire on the other side, that it was dangerous to try and occupy that space. But she couldn't draw enough breath from her fear to say anything. She watched in unrelenting horror as the hatch was finally breached by their combined efforts, only to have them devoured by the flames rushing through the new opening they had created. There was no time to scream, no time to formulate a new plan. There was hardly time to run. But that was her only viable option as the flames licked closer, kissing the backs of her legs as she hurled herself through the tumbling ship. Another burst of countermeasures erupted underneath her, feeling as if the Saratora was retching. It was something her body had the urge to do as well, but stopping meant burning. Anki leapt across an intersection of passageways and slid down a ladder well, feeling the heat radiating above and behind her as if it were stalking her and her alone. She had no idea where she was going, but following her instincts was all she had. Her feet fell heavily on the deck, the threat of flames left behind, but the compulsion to keep running pulsating in her mind like a warning. The Saratora fired something nearby. It didn't have the same quivering sound emitting through the hull as the countermeasures had. Perhaps it was a torpedo or railgun. Anki didn't know. All of the sounds were too familiar. For all she knew, it was the sound of the Sarah being hit, breached and boarded by the enemy. And here she was, unarmed and left to her own defenses. She stretched her legs, opening her gate to move more distance in a shorter span of time. It didn't matter if her legs were feeling flimsy, that her shins were on fire, her feet slamming to the deck like hammers. She had to run, to find a way off the ship before it went Nova. She didn't know how she knew it was coming, but it was the most sure she had felt about anything in a long time. With every other step, the hull of the ship felt as if it were tearing open, spilling its guts into the dark. Even the air was feeling thinner where she was. Anki found the frame number of her location and checked her comm unit for the location of her transport. The only safe way she could escape in one piece. If she was lucky. The comm unit pinpointed her location in relation to the transport. Horrified, she noticed she had been running the wrong direction. And now she could hear the sound of footsteps. A lot of them. The armory, she thought, shifting through the options on her comm unit as fast as her fingers could fly over the screen. That's more like it, she said, fighting back the want for hope. The armory was two decks above, but it was closer than the transport, and if the Greshans were boarding, then she needed a way to kill them. She ran up the nearest ladder leading to the next deck. A dim emergency beam was the only form of lighting in this area of the ship, and her eyes took a moment to adjust. She could still hear the footsteps echoing through the passages. It was a good sign to still be able to hear them. It meant this part of the hull wasn't open to the vacuum. Despite the lower air quality growing stale as it filtered through her lungs, she could at least be thankful for not having to worry about being sucked into the vacuum yet. No need to count your blessings when a curse is right around the corner, she thought. She kept running. Chapter 14. Brendel. Many thoughts go through a person's head when they are being left behind. As Brendel watched the Telran take off, the dark gray steel disappearing behind the clouds of exhaust and dust, he imagined the ship exploding, some cataclysmic defect finally rearing its head and bringing about the only justice the killer of worlds deserved. Of course, the fact that an explosion of the mighty Telran from his current position would ensure his demise as well came to mind, but he was dead anyway. He was just waiting for his body to catch up to the situation and comply with the actuality of known futures. Former Ensign Brendel Quinn, traitor to the Greshan Empire, banished to a lonely moon in the Keshnarian sector, was a dead man. Brendel pulled out the comm unit and tried to link up to the Telran, but his access was denied. He tried again and again, searching for a back door into the ship's network, anything that would allow him to send a distress call. He knew before he even started that it was no moot point. That wasn't a deterrent, though. He tried again with the same result, a black and red screen telling him it had failed to connect to a network. Brendel hissed in frustration, holding back the urge to slam the useless device to the ground and stomp it to pieces. He had known this would happen, but it didn't alleviate the sting of being shut out. He tapped his jacket and felt the beacon patiently waiting for use. He knew the time would come where that would be his only hope, but he couldn't afford to waste it now. Not with the Telran floating above him, blotting out the sky. Ilium knew he had the comm unit and most likely closed off access to the network. But he had no idea about the beacon. And the last thing Brendel needed was for his sole tool for at least trying to get off the rock to be muffled into uselessness by a vindictive son of a bitch like Ilium. He shoved the comm unit back into his pocket and cussed under his breath. He was forced into waiting, and his best chance was to wait until the Telran faded into the stars, just another dim discoloration of the darkness. He watched the massive mechanical city grow smaller as each second passed. The Telran floated under thrust, defying the laws of physics that said a mass of her size could not take flight despite the low gravitational pull of the rocky planetary body. Usually ships of that magnitude were constructed on stations already in orbit. The dark was a suitable place for such construction, especially considering how few people would die if a catastrophe were to happen. The stations held less than 30,000 Greshans, a far lower number than Gresha boasted with her 17 trillion inhabitants. That was the world he had left behind, bloated and angry. "I shouldn't be surprised at how much anger fueled my people's pride," he thought as the fading lights of the Telran became tiny dots against the dark, expansive sky. It was pride that made the Greshans want to reach for the stars in the first place, and pride that made them seek to conquer them all. There was no real gain in any of it, though. Gresha was still close to bursting at the seams as the population exploded. For every citizen sent out into the dark, there were 5 more to take their place. Perhaps they were fighting for a better place to die. Brendel walked away from his past, leaving the longing for home behind. He had no home. Not anymore. Even if he made it off his rock, he could never return to Gresha. Ilium had killed him without ever needing to pull the trigger. "What kind of society breeds an individual like that?" Brendel wondered. His family had its problems, but no one looked for a way to destroy another person's life. At least, he didn't think they did so purposefully. But isn't that exactly what his father had done by leaving his wife and young child alone? Falling back into thoughts of his childhood made his head swim. He inhaled a quick whiff of stale atmosphere and sat back on a boulder, eyes to the stars from whence he came. He wondered if the stars in the Keshnarian sector were the same stars he gazed upon as a child on Gresha. The keys that allowed intergalactic travel had shortened the distance between sectors, but it was also disorienting. It was hard to know where you were in the Ilorian galaxy after so many jumps, and the maps did little to orient a person's sense of direction. If he didn't know he was in the Keshnarian sector, then the stars would be indistinguishable from any others. The only variable was placement and luminosity. Everything else was relative. It was that kind of perspective that made Brendel feel like a speck of dust on the wind. The Greshans were no greater than any other specks of dust cast among the stars. So why did they have the innate drive to spring forth and conquer? "Some questions have no real answers," Brendel thought. Through the haze of the cloudy sky, Brendel saw what looked like a meteor arcing across the black canvas of the dark. The tail of it was scorching as it flew upward, the sheen of it reflecting light in a way that most meteors never did. He watched as the trajectory of it shifted upward and realized it wasn't a meteor at all, but a torpedo being launched from what must have been the Telran. "What the?" Brendel started to say as he stood up and gazed at the spectacle above. He lifted his hand, using his thumb and index finger as a square to determine if he could identify the target. The torpedo was the brightest light in the sky for several seconds as he strained to see beyond it. A moment later, the torpedo detonated, sending scattered light ricocheting like a miniature starburst. Whatever it had hit was solid, Brendel thought, and metallic. The initial blast was followed by dozens of smaller flashes. Brendel could see the bright firings of countermeasures deploying as more torpedoes launched from the first vessel. The light from the deployed armament framed the hulls of the large ships, making them look like gods battling in the sky above. Brendel couldn't hear the concussions from the exploding warheads, but with each flash he felt the devastation being wrought on the foreign ship. He could feel the cold touch of the trigger he would have squeezed to launch the assault he was witnessing like a phantom limb. The death being delivered so violently could have been by my hand, he thought as he kept his gaze centered on the trajectory of fire. From his vantage point, it looked as if the other ship had been approaching the moon, meeting the Telran halfway. But orientation was different in the dark than it was on the ground, feet planted in defiance. More explosions tore at the hull of the incoming ship, lighting the darkness with fire. Brendel pulled his comm unit out and used the lens to magnify the view of the battle. He could make out the definition of the ships better, but couldn't assess the damage very well. He watched as the unknown ship listed to its port side and wondered if it was from sustaining damage or if the countermeasures being deployed was causing the ship to lean so heavily. It could have suspended thrust and was merely floating, he thought. That was when he noticed the rupture emanating from the belly of the ship, the tearing of steel accompanied by bursts of explosive material. He recognized that tactic. The Greshans had boarded the ship and were now scuttling it from inside. The ship was as dead as Brendel was. They just didn't know it yet. Chapter 15. Ankh. The armory was stocked for war, but for a ground war. Everywhere Ankh looked was high-powered weaponry designed to cut through body armor. The problem was that if it made it through body armor, then the whole of the Ceratora could be compromised. It's hard to save a ship when you don't take precautions to preserve it, and Ankh wasn't looking forward to the air being sucked from her lungs by being thrust into the vacuum. She needed something else at her disposal. Something that could get the job done without risking the Ceratora unnecessarily. Ankh's fingers ran along the cold steel weaponry, digesting each one's makeup, use, and probability of being able to ward off the enemy in this constrictive environment. Nothing really jumped out to her as a viable option, so she settled for the high-charge kinetic weapon. It was convenient in the fact that it didn't need to be reloaded and was already fully charged. It discharged a blast of kinetic energy that, even though it was projected in orb form, wasn't exactly a projectile. The discharge of the weapon came in the form of a force of energy passing through the atmosphere. It was enough to knock a person over, crippling them in some cases, while not running the risk of breaching the hull. It isn't an ideal weapon to use in combat situations. It was more designed for policing. But it will have to do, she thought as she pulled it from its perch on the rack. The Ceratora was still listing to the port side, which made walking through the ship a bit more interesting as it picked up thrust. An evasive maneuver, Ankh thought. Never mind the fact that it was too late with the enemy already on board. She made her way through the ship, hiding in the shadows provided by the emergency lighting. The dull glow made it easy to hide, but she was getting nervous about bumping into an enemy without seeing them. She held the gun in a tight grip. Toying with the trigger was a nervous tap of her fingers. Ankh stayed low, hugging the bulkhead as she approached an intersection of passageways. She could hear voices, the distinct accent of Greshans. But they sounded far off, not as close as the dancing shadows along the overhead and bulkheads suggested. She peered out, careful not to reveal her location, and saw three Greshans blocking the passageway. There were bodies on the deck. blue uniforms of Luthian Navy surrounded by dark pools of what looked like blood. Anki's eyes narrowed in the dim light. There were only three men, easy to dispatch, but she felt weight holding her back, causing her to withdraw. This isn't how a Marine is trained, she thought, tightening her grip on the weapon and drawing it to a ready position. The next moment defined who she was, and it happened in the blink of an eye. Anki rounded the corner, her body low until the men came into view. The sudden movement drew their attention, but that moment was all she needed. Inhale, exhale, fire. Three times. Three short bursts of kinetic energy lighting the space in electric blue light. The gravity of the dark playing against the orbs of energy as they traveled the short distance between her weapon and where they struck the Greshens. She watched, eyes wide, as their bodies sprawled out, arms and legs flinging wide as they were driven back. The sizzling energy of the shots sent the men into the bulkhead and their bodies collapsed in a heap on the deck, mixing with the blood of her people. They deserved it, she thought as she wiped the tears from her eyes. She had never killed anyone before, and the weight of guilt was lighter than she had imagined it would be. She had faced a choice and took a leap of faith that she could do her part in saving the ship. As the sound of her heavy breathing faded, Anki heard another sound, that of footsteps running. Without a second thought, Anki ran towards the next hatch, deeper into the Saratora but closer to the transport ship. The footsteps were behind her, but she knew they probably heard the tattering of her magnetic boots clanging against the deck as she ran. It didn't matter, though, if they heard her or not. She was armed, and she had already killed three of them. She almost welcomed the coming conflict, the anticipation fighting against the self-doubt that threatened to cripple her. Almost was the operative word. Lightning flashed across the deck, nipping at her heels. The magnetic properties of the boots were waning, and her control as she ran across the deck and bulkhead was losing its effectiveness. The burning of her shins caused her to lose speed, but the sound of gunfire and the hissing of electrical emissions made her push harder. Anki rounded the next corner and stopped, fighting to breathe. She jutted out and returned fire, quickly disappearing behind the corner again, as more shots rang out in her direction. The Greshens were using a different kind of weapon, the arc of electricity jutting out like tendrils biting at her. The burn of the arc reminded her of the pain she would feel if she didn't stop them. A direct hit would be crippling, and then they would kill her. She poised herself to return fire, but somewhere an explosion erupted beneath them. The deck cracked and fire shot through the gaping holes, searing the atmosphere. All around her the ship was ablaze, cutting her off from the Greshen forces, but also preventing her from escaping. The only way out is through the flames, she thought. She turned and ran from the carnage, the smoke and heat making it hard for her to breathe. There was no stopping. She could only run harder as the cracks running along the deck began to expand. The ship was tearing itself apart. Is it a self-destruct sequence? Anki asked herself. Did the Luthians give up? Where's the fight? Anger devoured her questions as she pushed herself harder. She was covered in darkness, blanketing her fear as her heart beat rapidly, pulsing blood through enlarged, hyper-oxygenated veins. Panting, she found her way to the transports and was horrified to see the devastation awaiting her. She had found the area where the Greshens must have breached their way onto the Saratora. The transports were still there, aligned in long rows along the bulkheads. But the corridors of the bay were filled with dead bodies, mostly Luthian. She couldn't believe what she was seeing, and panic rose in her throat as a scream. She couldn't hold it back, even though it did nothing to help her situation. Just the horror of seeing so much death before her eyes needed a release, and she found it through the expression of coarse vocal cords. The pain was stabbing, but it didn't silence her. Only the lack of air muted her scream until she felt empty. She looked around and took it in. "Why so many?" she wondered. "How could this happen?" Her mind moved immediately to the fact that these people must have been trying to escape and were murdered for doing the only thing that made sense at the time, trying to survive. None of them seemed to be armed, she noticed. They were executed by a heartless enemy. "This is my fate if I stay," she thought, urging herself to take the first step through the grotesque display and towards her transport. Anki walked through the swarm of bodies, her brothers and sisters in uniform. Luthians who were the only ones standing between the Gresham Empire and the freedom her homeland wanted to preserve. She wondered if that dream had died with these sailors scattered across the deck. She desecrated their bodies by walking over them, upon them, in hopes of finding the transport assigned to her. Thrust began to fall away as the ship collapsed on itself. She ran now. The horrid crunch of flesh and bone as each heavy boot fell to the organic deck of the dead. It echoed in her mind with each footfall. Each solitary step driving her to tears as she realized she was living a nightmare she didn't know could exist. She knew death was a reality, but here and now it seemed so much harsher. This was more than murder, more than defeat. "This is genocide," she thought as her throat burned from the bile rising in her throat. Nauseated, she made her way to the transport and scanned her comm unit for access. The airlock cycled and welcomed her longingly as she collapsed into the cockpit, away from the horrors of the Saratora. Anki had nowhere to run, nowhere to flee to, but she had to escape. Her mind sought out some kind of distraction from what she was experiencing. She needed to find that happy place that made her numb to the pain. But all she could think of was how many people had died around her without her even knowing it. Hundreds of Luthians she had never met had been killed by their enemy, and she could do nothing to avenge them. Instead, she was running for her life. Her mind struggled to focus on something else, and kept flashing images of people she had met. People like Wella. She was most likely dead now, Anki thought. The cold reality bringing her to realize she was in the transport, but she still wasn't safe yet. She had to get out of the Saratora before it was destroyed. Anki jumped forward into the cockpit, crawling over protruding surfaces trying to get situated. It was dark except for the dim light coming through the airlock. The fires were suffocating any breathable air as it spread out into the bay, so she cycled the airlock closed as her fingers found their way to the control console where her helmet waited. "I need breathable air if I'm going to get out of this," she thought. Anki flipped the switches into manual operation and started the drive, watching as the transport sprung to life and illuminated the dark confines of its small cockpit. Anki had little experience, even in simulations, with flying transports or any type of spacecraft. Yet that didn't matter. The only thing on her mind was survival. The drive came online, the dull hum of metal vibrating against other metal. Anki tried to shift the thrust to escape, but the transport was stuck. still strapped into the Ceratora, and she had no way of knowing how to release it from its prison. She increased thrust again, the drive whining under the strain, the pilot's chair vibrating nauseatingly. Thoughts of the transport being ripped apart, or the hull fracturing and suffocating her as all the air escaped, crossed her mind. A lack of experience and the pressure of trying to survive were getting to her, and she could feel every bad decision threatening to loom in her mind. She was questioning everything and second-guessing herself. There were sounds echoing through the transport that made her think death was imminent. Never mind the fact that she had been shot at, almost burned, and the Ceratora was being torn apart by the Gresham Empire. Anki donned the helmet, feeling the cold gel envelop her face and neck. It would be comforting if it wasn't so damn distracting, she thought as she reversed the thrust and tried to back out of the Ceratora's confinement. It was a moot point. The transport was stuck, and she was screwed. She shifted the throttle back and forth, hoping the rocking motion would tear it loose. Anki winced as the sounds of ripping and tearing steel erupted around her. The monitor showed the Ceratora cracking into pieces like glass. Her hand kept shifting the throttle, forward and backward, the transport rocking in its cradle of death. And then it tore loose. Chapter 16. Brendel. Brendel had never seen a ship go Nova before, but it was mesmerizingly beautiful in such a sickening way. The grotesqueness of the situation was heavy on his heart as he watched the arms of violent radiation reach across the horizon. Part of the explosion encapsulated the hull of the Telran, and for the briefest of moments he thought the destruction might have claimed his previous ship as well. There was no way to truly know, though, because the light seemed to scatter across the expanse and be held in place, moving ever so slightly outward before the rays collapsed in on themselves. After that, he was effectively blinded by the light and left in the silent rage of an alien moon's grip. He stared, mouth agape, as the rain of fire and metal fell to the surface. He knew he should be afraid, but there was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide that could save him from the onslaught if it chose to take him. So he stood and watched death let loose from its chain. The ground quaked as heavy steel structures dropped from the dark, propelled by the force of the explosion and welcomed by the gravitational pull of the moon. Brendel almost lost his balance when chunks of debris landed near him, but he still didn't run. He was numb and devastated, simultaneously. The sky burned in crimson regret as the unknown ship left its place in the dark for a rocky grave. Everywhere there was fire raining down, scorching the ground below and smoking with the nauseating smell of burnt chemicals. He knew there was radiation from the reactors, or from the explosion itself. There was too much energy to not be radioactive to some extent. Another form of death presenting itself. Starvation or radiation poisoning, Brendel thought. But there was an option for salvation in the hell he was witnessing. Brendel ran for a mass of burning metal. He didn't know exactly what he was looking for, but maybe he would know it when he found it. The bulk of debris was scattered across the horizon in all directions, but he made his way through the field of falling dead for the largest structure. If he could salvage any of it, then maybe he could find a way off the moon. Maybe there will be a transport ship of moderate functionality, he hoped. The ground opened to a steep crater he didn't see coming because he was looking up towards the hazard falling towards him. Brendel tumbled, his body racked by rocks as inertia punished him, scraping his arms and bruising in its assault. He came to a rest on his back, grit and grime covering his face. He was out of breath and hurting all over. But hope was over the ridge and down a steep embankment, where charred metal awaited him. He climbed to his feet and hobbled until the ache in his legs faded enough to run. Climbing the ridge was difficult, as dirt and rock shifted under the weight of his feet. He slid down and had to start over several times before he finally made his way to the top, cresting over the edge and collapsing as his hungry lungs gasped for air. The thin atmosphere made it difficult to catch his breath, but the only thing going through his mind was, "I don't want to die here," like a mantra, a battle cry. He rose again, smoke filling his lungs from nearby destruction, and he sprinted. Everything, every danger, every fear fell away as he made his way to the rising structure burning in the distance like a candle. The flames lapped against the steel and reached out to the sky with fiery fingers, longing to hold on to what it once was. Brendel collapsed before it, the flames burning the air around him. He panted and crawled his way to the burning hull, to the hope that laid in wait to be discovered. It was too hot to touch, so he removed his jacket and patted down the flames, snuffing it out with the only thing available to him. They obeyed, the first thing to go his way since the Telran left him behind. At least without the flames, the air was getting easier to breathe, Brendel thought as he sat down next to the charred remains. It towered over his seated body, an ominous black. Streaks still filled the sky, but the worst of it seemed to be over. For now, at least. He had to wait for the heat to dissipate before he could claw at the remains, but at least he had made it. Brendel looked up at the sky one last time before his body gave in to exhaustion. He fell back, his body warm against the rocky surface, his lungs tired from the torment of smoke engulfing them as he ran. With the relative danger gone, he allowed himself to rest, but not for long. There was nothing organic in the whole heap of burning metal that he could find. That could be a good thing, Brendel thought as he dug through more of the wreckage in hopes of finding a way to communicate off the moon. He wasn't exactly in the right headspace to find dead bodies at the moment, anyway. He had enough death haunting him than to have to worry about seeing the ghostly remnants of previous life laid out against the cataclysm here before him. Of course, when was anyone ever really ready to find a dead body? There was one thing he knew for a fact. This moon was no place for him to be. It was a death trap, and one that he was thrust upon for spite. He needed a way off this rock before he died. Of course, the raining debris might decapitate him before he found what he needed, but it was better not to think about things like that. If it happened, it happened. Otherwise, he had work to do. The scalding burn of hot metal against his flesh caused Brendel to yelp in pain. He cut his hand as he pulled away, and dark blood was beginning to pool in his palm before he had the chance to realize it was happening. "Damn it," he hissed, removing the tucked-in portion of his shirt and tearing it with his good hand. It wasn't the best bandage, but it was what he had for the time being. It wouldn't serve him any justice to bleed out and die as the sky fell around him. Besides, if he'd have been smart, he would have worn gloves for this kind of work. If he'd have been smart, then he wouldn't have sent a message home that made him look like a traitor and got himself into this mess in the first place. It's all about perspective, he thought as he wrapped his hand tightly, the sting of tender flesh coursing through his nervous system. He had to be smarter if he was going to survive. It's the things you didn't think about that had the highest potential for killing you. Brendel looked up at the sky. The forefront of the horizon burning away atmosphere and fuel as whichever ship lost the fight was engulfed in raging flames. The battle hadn't lasted for very long. He had seen the streams of ordnance being launched in both directions, lighting the sky like falling stars. The finality of the losing ship going Nova meant there was a lot of death dealt in a single hand. A part of him wanted to say a prayer for those dead and dying above. But another part of him hoped it was the Telran. Better yet, he hoped it was Ilium burning alive as he sat in Brendel's former console in combat control. What better way to administer justice than by the fires of your enemy's own doing? A glimmer to his left caught his attention. It was something falling. Perhaps another large section of debris. But this one looked a little too controlled to be scrap. Brendel jogged to the top of a rocky hill, away from the burning fumes and smoke, and tried to find the object again. His eyes narrowed, struggling to find it against the glow of the inferno above. It took a moment, but the falling object fell below the burning horizon. No, it was flying below the horizon. "It's a ship, albeit a small one," he thought. Pulling out his comm unit, he tasked himself with trying to sync up with the vessel, to use its communication system to call for help. But it was his luck that the ship was Luthien. The computer system inside of it revolting with as much fury as he imagined any of their soldiers would put up if hailed by aggression. Brendel didn't have much choice, though. This might be his only way off the rock. He just hoped that trying wasn't going to get him killed any quicker than the gods had intended. He also hoped he could change his luck and rely on some skills he hadn't had much use for since joining the Greshan Navy. One of the joys of a childhood with a mostly absent father was getting to grow up with bad influences. His mother hated his friends. But spending a lot of his time on the streets, getting in and out of trouble, had taught him a few things that life in the Greshan Navy had not. That skill set of hacking into foreign networks became a game-changer when he was 16. Brendel remembered the thrill of hacking into a Taurian comm unit and being able to access personal information. It was all innocent fun at the time, and he did it purely for the chance to eat a free meal. It was the risk of getting caught that made him do it again and again. Almost as if the trick of getting caught was a myth. It seemed that way. At least, until he got caught. The Taurian man in question was an ambassador from Dauracia. Politics, not being something Brendel spent a lot of time contemplating, had brought this man to seek refuge from his own government because he had been the one to commit his people under Greshan rule. The citizens of Tauracia had revolted, but like most one-sided battles, they were crushed by the Greshan Empire. The fact the world was left alive showed the mercy that Gresha had bestowed upon them. That mercy was why the man didn't make a big deal out of Brendel stealing from him. Because charging aggression with theft would have been a slap in the face to what the Empire had done for that man and his people. It was also a learning experience for Brendel of what wrath felt like. The ambassador might not have reported Brendel to the police, but he did notify Brendel's mother. That turned out to be worse. But skills learned often came back to be of use. It had been 8 years since that life-altering moment. His life had seen more ups than downs since then, excluding his current predicament. But he was breathing, so there was hope. His fingers flew across the screen of his comm unit as he tried to hack into the flight control system of the transport. It took several attempts. but he finally managed to get past the security protocols. The first thing he noticed was whoever was in the transport was not trained as a pilot. The transport was burning hard and losing lift at an alarming rate. He needed to get it back under control to slow the descent. Otherwise, it would be hot molten metal at the bottom of a crater by the time it made contact with the surface. Brendel's fingers glided across his screen, lowering the throttle and manipulating the flight control surfaces so it caught more air, thus slowing it down significantly. The problem then became it being a heavy-ass rock in the sky ready to fall straight down due to a lack of thrust. Brendel's years in the Gresham Navy had taught him many skills when it came to flying spacecraft. Most of what it taught him was that he was a shitty pilot with varying degrees of luck. As the transport stalled, Brendel cranked up the throttle and maneuvered the transport to head in his relative direction. The heading change actually increased its lift momentarily and bought him some time, but it was still falling rapidly. He cussed under his breath as he struggled to increase the upward pitch, hoping the increased drag would slow it down enough to not end in a fiery crash. Whatever effect he might have seemed negligible, but he had to have hope. Or something. Dumb luck's the best luck, if it was all you have, he thought as the transport shifted, the nose rising slightly before it touched down onto the moon. Touch was perhaps too weak a word for the screaming calamity that followed. From his vantage point, he watched the transport skid across jagged rock, tearing the exterior hull to pieces. Sparks flew and smoke heaved as the craft tumbled across the terrain in shrieking fury. He imagined the occupant was being jostled around quite a bit, but surely it was survivable, he hoped. He put his comm unit in his pocket and ran towards the crashed transport. Smoke infiltrated his lungs and obscured his vision, but he kept low, trying to breathe semi-clear air. Whoever was in the wreckage could be badly wounded, and if there was a fire, he'd need to put it out before it could damage the communications equipment on board. He felt bad thinking about it in those terms, but he was trying to survive. I'm trying to help the other person survive, too. So that has to count for something. The more the smoke cleared as a stiff wind blew across the terrain, the more he could smell the smoldering plastic and composite of the transport. It had a very distinct, nauseating stench that probably killed more brain cells with each breath than any other chemical reaction, save for chemical warfare. But that was borderline barbaric. Brendel's nostrils burned as he crested the next hill and approached the crater left behind. It penetrated several meters through the broken rock and clay, and finally came to rest on its starboard side. The crumpled hull looked worse than he imagined it would. Perhaps it was heavier than the display had read when I seized control, he thought as he looked at the crash site. Burning and charred parts littering the landscape for as far as he could see. Not all of it belonged to this transport, he knew, but it made the scene seem all the more devastating. His heart was pounding in his chest, and he was overcome with nausea. He doubled over and vomited, the smell and exertion finally taking their toll on him. He didn't know what was waiting for him in the craft below. But as he wiped his lips with the sleeve of his jacket, he thought about the relevant hostility he could face if the person inside knew he was aggression. The smart thing to do was to go in armed, weapon drawn, ready to fire in self-defense. But that wasn't how Brendel wanted to represent himself. He wasn't Gresham Navy anymore. He was his own entity, abandoned by his people. He was no more a part of them than the person inside the transport. His hand found the handle of his gun, patting it to make sure it was there. Satisfied, He began the descent into the crater in hopes of salvaging whatever he could and finding a way off this rock. Chapter 17, Anki.